This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Now Booker with Tucker on him. Throws it up for Ayton. Shot blocked by Antetokounmpo. What a block from Giannis.
Adam, it is now official. We have to fear the deer because the deer, and I mean the Milwaukee Bucks, are now NBA champions. They finally got it. We finally got some new blood in the fold on the Larry O'Brien trophy. Giannis Antetokounmpo finally redeemed himself after two previous seasons of early playoff exit disappointments. Had a little bit of drama. Almost blew that one. The Nets one, do you think if they lost it, they would have blown it? Would that be fair to say?
It's pointless to look back and say what if, because none of that did happen. So it's Milwaukee built themselves to be a championship team. They didn't just say, let's get superstars who want to play together. We need to bring in somebody. Let's bring in Eric Bledsoe. Okay, we need to upgrade over him. Let's bring in Drew Holiday. Get Brooke Lopez in.
Sorry to cut you off, but that was a bold move by John Horst bringing in Drew Holiday. They gave up three first rounders and two swaps with the Pelicans to make that happen. But hey,
they won the championship. That's what you do. They traded for PJ Tucker midseason to, be that guy to put him over the edge. And in the end, they have the championship. So going into the luxury tax, trading all their future assets away, it doesn't matter because you're the champion. So you can ride high for the next 4 or 5 years saying, they were the champion.
Right. I mean, it was really fun to watch them play. I mean, they had the thing is, like, Budenholzer's imprint, it was same in Atlanta and it carried over in Milwaukee, was that they wanted to start with defense. They wanted to make sure the defense created the offense, which is why they were so good in transition with creating threes and dunks for Giannis and such. And I felt like this year it didn't turn the other way when they got Holiday, because Holiday's a good defensive player too. But it really, their offense just ramped up. They were like first in points per game, sixth in efficiency. They were second in 3-point field goal percentage, fourth in makes. Like, their offense, when they would, like, you saw that one against Miami and very early in the playoffs, didn't they get like 46 points in a quarter or something like that? Like, when they are humming, they are really, really hard to beat. And they also play good defense at home. So there was a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde situation for the Bucks, where defensively they would struggle on the road, but their offense would be good enough to get them over the hump, even against really good teams like, the Nets with Durant, and then the Hawks, who even without Trae Young still was pretty effective. And Giannis did get injured late in that Hawks series, but unbelievably, just in a superhuman fashion, he just came back for the finals, didn't miss a finals game, and somewhere around like 35 points, 13 rebounds, just absolutely superhuman for it. Like, where does this put Giannis Antetokounmpo for you right now?
He's become a superstar because of it. This was the, he's too young. He won't do it. He doesn't have the super teams around him. No, he will be cemented as, okay, you are now, you fulfilled your destiny that everyone said, well, it should happen, but we don't know because it's Milwaukee. You have to leave Milwaukee to get there.
Right. And I felt like there was a little bit of improvement in terms of, like, I wouldn't even say improvement, more like honing in, where it's like, look, I can do this in the paint all day, draw fouls. And even if I'm a terrible free throw shooter, which he is, I mean, let's be real, like, that's his biggest weakness, but he still gets to the line a lot. His passing is improving. Now let's look at the situation on the cap. You won the title, you got the hardware. Congratulations to the Bucks. Shout out Steve Willey. But let's now look at the books. Giannis, this was the big key when they got Holiday. It was to convince Giannis we're serious about winning a title, and we want you to stay here. We think you can stay here and win. And it worked, because in December he signed a 5-year, $228 million extension, Supermax. Obviously he deserves it. Chris Middleton was already locked in the year previous, so he's at $33 million. Drew Holiday's got a new one that's going to kick in. That was a 4-year, $135 million deal. Lopez is in double-digit salary. So obviously, like you had alluded to, they are into the tax now. And they're probably going to be a repeat taxpayer after this. But you do have on the books, off the books, PJ Tucker and Bobby Portis, who can opt out, which he probably will because he played well in the finals. So I don't think they can retain them both. Do you think that they have a preference over who they want to keep?
I don't think they'll retain either because Portis was, you know, he was fine in New York the year before. It's just, he's just one of those players. I don't know how why people don't like him because
great energy will
give you. Maybe it is, you know, his character is a little bit of a concern, but on the court, he provides you what he needs to, what you need from him for 20 minutes. So I don't understand the, like I said, the hate towards him. But in the end, this team is coming back as is. They have no future assets. They have no, they got no draft picks. They're, you're bringing back what, 8 or 10
The big question really comes down to, and it's on the lower, like the level below the superstars, obviously. It's really between Dante DiVincenzo, who was starting for them before he tore his Achilles early in the playoffs, and Pat Connaughton, who sort of plugged into his spot. And I think DiVincenzo's restricted free agency is in 2022. And then Connaughton has a player option at only $5 million. He could easily opt out of that. That's kind of the decision to make on that end in terms of the primary rotation players. But, you know, the hopefully they could probably do something where they can use like the taxpayers bid level exception and try to do something there. But by doing that, you can't be too deep into the tax and you have to start getting rid of players. So, you know, it gets a little complicated there. That's why they had to get rid of Torrey Craig. You know, they were trying to avoid having to pay the tax. The funny part, and I was looking into this, it didn't work anyway, trying to stay out of the tax, because Drew Holiday had a $1 million playoff incentive if they won the championship. So when it kicked in after they won, they went over the tax by $1 million.
And so again, that's a trade-off they'd take 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, but you're going to be a repeat taxpayer. You're a taxpayer 1 year earlier than you wanted to be.
Yeah, but you won the championship, so they don't really care the same way Golden State hasn't cared.
Yeah, but they won the championship, which is legit. You know,
if they didn't, you know, it leaves a sour taste in your mouth. But you're a champion. Oh yeah, we'll gladly write a check because we got the trophy.
Yeah,
and that's the end. That's all that matters.
How does a championship team improve? Well, it's hard to, you know, the funny part about the Bucks is that I thought regular season wise, they were actually better the previous 2 years, which was with Bledsoe. But now you got the star power to in place of Bledsoe with Holiday at the point, who is a bulldog on defense. And now you really got a team with stars and an MVP caliber player who has tasted gold. They have a championship. Now that's now how you keep it. That's the big question.
Crowder looking, throws it alley. Oh! Aiden puts it down! He puts it down! It's over!
All right, Adam. The sun rose in the west for the Phoenix Suns getting the Western Conference Championship. And it seemed like an epiphany for them, and it was there was ecstasy everywhere. And then the Bucks just came roaring back, won 4 in a row in the finals on them, and the sun set to – I mean, it's really hard to say – fuck this. Can I start over?
Go ahead.
Sorry about that. I didn't like the way I started it. Okay. All right, Adam, the Phoenix Suns. This was kind of a little bit of a surprise. You're looking at a team that they had lost 50 games before that. And here they were in the NBA Finals. A real heartbreak there at the end. Had a 2-0 lead in the finals. The Bucks came back and won 4 in a row. And you got a 36-year-old Chris Paul who played out of his mind in the playoffs. Fell just a little short. It had to hurt a little bit. I know you have to be proud of that team for being able to get as far as they did. But God damn it, losing in the finals must have hurt.
Of course, because they were so high on themselves after, you know, being the hottest team in the NBA. And when I say the hottest team in the NBA, I mean the healthiest, because everyone else had, if you look at the Lakers, let's look at Utah with Conley.
The Clippers, they lost
the
Kawhi.
Clippers losing Kawhi. Everybody they faced all had injuries, especially throughout the season. Nobody in Phoenix went down. Phoenix's entire team stayed healthy all season long. So
it looked like that was going to happen against Milwaukee, but Giannis Antetokounmpo must have 8 ligaments in his knee because they didn't tear them all because he's Superman, and he played in the finals anyway and played great and sort of brought it home for him. 51-21 season. Monty Williams had just coached the hell out of him. DeAndre Ayton showed improvement. He'll likely get a max extension in the offseason. That'll kick in 2022. Devin Booker was a stud in his first playoff appearance this year, or postseason appearance this year. And then you also got Mikal Bridges, who had some bright spots. Cameron Johnson, too. Really young guy who can shoot. Their free agency is kind of simple. You know, Cameron Payne, who they had gotten off the street to back up Chris Paul, he's open, but we'll see if they'll be able to retain him, even because he played over his head. And then Frank Kaminsky, I don't really see him coming back. Torrey Craig is possible, you know, but in terms of their cap, like they're kind of like hovering right around the cap space situation, but that's going to very quickly be gone the next year once Ayton and Bridges extensions kick in.
Well, so they're going to have to bring Chris Paul back. So,
well, here's the question with Chris Paul. So he can opt in and get $41 million, or he can opt out and get a few more years before he hits that 38-year mark on the veterans minimum, and he can try to tag himself for more years but with a little less money, and that might give him the room to make an addition in cap space. Like, which one would you do if you're Chris Paul?
I think he'd try to take the more years, since he negotiated for the more years for the 36-year-old contract.
But if you're James Jones, you can't let Paul leave. So where's the asking price start at? Does it start at like 35?
It'll have to be probably, you know.
Maybe it'll match his years. He'll get 36 when he's 36. He'll get 37 when he's 37. He'll get $38 million when he's 38.
That's the thing, is, you know, giving him a 3-year deal is a very bitter pill to swallow.
It is, but you can't. I keep saying it, Adam, you can't lose Chris Paul. Like, they add Chris Paul to this team pretty much NBA Finals. The only other addition they had was Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder signed through 2023. He's still in the fold.
Oh, everyone is still around. So they're bringing the team back. They have to bring him back. It's just one of those, like, you know, Philly, like, well, we want Al Horford. Okay, well, you gave him the fourth year. Nobody else would. Okay, now you have to live with it. If they give Chris Paul that third year, all right, they're going to have trouble ahead. And it's one of those, like, yeah, do they make the finals again? They actually have to play harder this year, next year, to earn the
I don't know if that's possible.
Because if everyone else is coming back, like, you know, again, I just mentioned all the injuries. We can even add Denver and Jamal Murray to that list. Mm-hmm. It's going to be quite hard to come back when everyone's at full health and they don't have this truncated schedule of let's try to jam every game in.
The only other thing you can think of is that maybe Ayton will up his scoring like he did in the playoffs, and he'll do that on a continuous basis in the regular season, where instead of having a great game one day and then kind of a stinker the next. Bridges, I really like. I really hope he's not like a casualty of like the ownership of the Suns looking down the Robert Sarver, looking down and saying, man, I don't want to go into the tax. Maybe we should let Bridges maybe we'll let him hang out there and see in restricted free agency if we can get him on an offer sheet. I hope they can ink him up. I understand the struggle there. You don't want to try to match up too much money in the future long-term on Ayton and Bridges, but I feel like that those are two like cornerstones.
That's also down the line. Right now, their job is just bring Chris Paul back and try to do it again.
Here's Thibodeau now. He'll go to the hole, leave it. That's seven. Oh, beautiful offense as Thibodeau set up Ben Simmons. And now Embiid jawing with Capella. Officials get between them. Sixers with all kind of swagger here tonight in front of their home crowd.
Okay, Adam, the process is still continuing in Philadelphia, unless you want to call it the Sam Hinkie process, which is long gone. But the process, Joel Embiid, he had an absolutely incredible season, close to like an MVP status if it wasn't for Nikola Jokic, arguably for me. But they get to the second round. Ben Simmons almost has like a 7-game-long brain fart where he just doesn't want to score anymore. And they lose in 7 games to the Atlanta Hawks at home. Just a terrible disappointment for a team that had the best record in the East.
This is what happens when you I don't know, try to rush into a plan, because last year, let's get all these big expensive parts. Well, they realized that failed. So, okay, let's get a little more team oriented. Let's
get Doc Rivers.
Let's get Doc Rivers. Let's get Seth Curry. Let's try some, you know, Denny Green. Let's bring him in.
Beef up the bench a tad.
Yeah. And then it just turned out to, well, Simmons doesn't want to shoot. We all knew that before. Embiid slowly crapped out towards the end, which we expected before. And I don't want to say, you know, they the better team won out of that matchup, because Philly was the better team. It was just they couldn't do it, because
one of their I think that the better I do think that Philly was in the end the better team. What happened was one of the key cogs to the better team just went into shutdown mode. And I'm not trying to put it all on Ben Simmons, but that was a really, really bad look for him from a production standpoint. He only averaged 12 points a game in the playoffs alone. I mean, that's just unacceptable for a superstar, of which he is paid like.
He is paid like, and that's also what I was going to get to, is because the person who makes the most in that roster is Tobias Harris, who puts up numbers, but
he's a great scorer.
But is he really that guy that team needs?
Like, I remember when Embiid went out for that fourth game against the Wizards. I know it was the Wizards, but Harris just went into takeover mode. They had like 30-something points. So, I mean, he has the ability to really score on a dime, you know, and I don't know about him defensively, but he also gets 7 rebounds a game. He gets to the free throw line a lot. Like, he has the makings of a terrific offensive player, but I do have issues for him as a two-way player. And that's something that Doc Rivers tries to value. Their defense was good, and that's mostly because Embiid in the middle controls a lot of what happens in the paint. It's really hard to score around him.
Yeah, there is that, and, you know, they, like you mentioned, their bench, but, you know, they're losing Mike Scott. Their George Hill is 35, so his contract's partially guaranteed.
Right, and I think he'll probably be gone unless they can lump it in a trade, of which that team will cut him. So
I don't think Dwight Howard's going to want to come back on a veteran minimum again. So you have, you know, you got young people they like Shake Milton. They like Thibault, Tyrese, Maxey, they like. So
Maxey played great in one of those games against the Hawks. Like, if he hadn't played well in that game 6, they probably would have lost in 6.
It's just one of those things, like, you have, okay, Simmons is our point guard. Well, then who's your shooter? Who's going to be the person you need? The GM needs to put somebody next to, like, you know, the Celtics when they had Rondo. Yeah, Rondo can't shoot. Okay, you have Ray Allen sitting in the corner, and he just sat in the corner. Who was, you know, Seth Curry was going to be that guy? No, not really. You need to become creative with your roster when you have a 6'11 point guard who doesn't want to shoot.
Right. And the other problem for them is just the general makeup from when they drafted the foundation of the team with Embiid and Simmons, and then they made those two deals, actually. They got the one for Harris that they re-signed him for, and then they had Jimmy Butler, but he departed in free agency. But for Simmons, the thing is, like, he's not a conventional point guard. He's 6'11". He kind of hovers in the paint. He doesn't take any threes at all. He can't make free throws. So he's just severely limited from a point position standpoint. So when you're playing a team like the Hawks and they have an elite point guard in Trae Young, you know, and he's able to make his free throws, he's able to sink his threes and control the offense that way, it's difficult when the other guy is trying to control the tempo and you're already hamstrung by the inability to do this and this and this. And then you have to find the distribution from other things like Shake Milton, Seth Curry, Matisse Thybulle, Maxey. Like, that's, you can't keep dipping into that. The only thing you can hope for, in my opinion, is that it's going to be hard to improve unless you just let Danny Green walk and then you cut George Hill. You can get a little bit of room under this luxury tax to try to get better. Unless you do a trade for Simmons, which is like the big idea, like the big move, the big bold move. Like, the only other thing is you just hope for those older guys in the depth spot to get experience from having to play more and score more in Ben Simmons' absence or mental absence, that they actually get better and it kind of beefs off the bench. But I don't think that was the goal of the Sixers. I don't think they were like, you know, guys, we need Ben to play worse so that our bench can be better.
Well, it's not that. And also, it's a very strange strategy to go all in and everything hinges on your point guard shooting.
Correct.
But you know, let's put everything on something that somebody doesn't do. Like, it was almost expected that it was going to fail. Like, the process was going to backfire if everything pivots around him on his weakness, relying on that. Plus, Atlanta was hot, but just going in, like, you can't blame it all on Ben Simmons. You can't blame most of it on Ben Simmons because there's the other guys who were also doing nothing.
Oh, yeah, defensively, they had some hiccups in that playoffs. Like, I mean, they let Kevin Werter go off. You know, like, you can't let things like that happen. You know, so, and I think that just speaks to some of the things that Doc Rivers has had this history before. You know, he had it in Orlando. I don't know if he had that issue in Boston, unless you can correct me, where he blew a lead, but he definitely did it twice with the Clippers. And now with Philly, they were up, they basically had a top spot in the East and they couldn't finish it off. Like, if they played the Bucks, I'm not trying to say like, oh, if it wasn't for them crazy kids in Atlanta, you know, Philly would have been in the finals. Like, that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm saying that, like, it seemed on paper like they had it in the bag and they didn't do it. And, you know, Doc has had this go follow him in different places.
Irving spins on the baseline, elevates, and caught one underneath. Wow.
Oh, this guy is so special. He averaged 30 points per game over the entire month of March. Long stretches of games where he individually can command and control an offense and keep you single-handedly in the game. The guy is brilliant.
Adam, the Brooklyn Nets. Wow, what a superstar-laden experiment this one was. So Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are now ready to go with a fully healthy Durant coming off an Achilles injury. You can tell early on in the season that he's back to form. He has not lost a step, but James Harden I wouldn't say fell into their lap, but the machinations were in place behind the scenes to try to make it happen. And they did, but they did have to give up a lot of players. They had to involve more teams to make it a four-way. And now they are just absolutely knee-deep in the tax. Injuries sort of caught up to them with Harden and Kyrie, and Kevin Durant tried to carry them, but they lost in seven games in an epic series against Milwaukee. Now that we'll see if they can run it back, but I mean, they have no room for error financially.
All right.
Three guys.
We can just wrap up Brooklyn real quick right here. What's the salary cap next year?
They are $26 million.
No. What's the cap?
Oh, what's the cap? The cap is about 112. And then the tax is at $136 million.
All right. Harden, Durant, and Kyrie make a combined $121 million.
Right. And
so those three guys alone.
Joe Harris makes $16
million. It doesn't count anybody else. So it's just all you can do is get undrafted free agents and then, you know,
like
Boogie Cousins takes the middle, and it's all you can do. You have five plus six players on the roster next year. You got, like you said, Joe Harris, DeAndre Jordan, and Elise Johnson has a team option. Other than that, you have no draft picks. You right. have no
gave him up
assets.
In the Harden deal for the most part. Yeah.
You can't buy anybody. So all you're gonna do is literally all it's those six guys and minimum deals. So you can hope that, like I said, you can get a Boogie or Marc Gasol, or maybe, you know, Blake Griffin might come back for the veterans minimum. But
maybe
that's all you can get.
Maybe get Spencer Dinwiddie, who opted out, maybe get him back for less. I don't think that's gonna happen, but it's a possibility.
No, that's not we could just wrap it up now because
you want to talk about their offense though? Their offense was incredible.
Oh, I retract my statement. They also have Landry Shamet and Nick Claxton. I forgot
did you mention TLC? Timothy Luongo?
No, he's gone.
Oh yeah, you're right.
but I forgot Shamet and Claxton. They were how can I forget those two superstars?
I was glad to see Durant back into form. 27.7 rebounds, 5 assists, 1.3 blocks, an absolute machine in that Bucks series when Irving went down in game 4 and Harden was just limping along in the very beginning of the series. He came back at the end, but you could tell he wasn't 100%. Harden actually was the conference player of the month in the East when he was traded there. He was the conference player of the month twice. I mean, when Harden was cooking, I mean, they were working. Like, this was not a, like, I don't feel like this was like a weird experiment where it's like, man, I don't know if this is going to work. It worked when they played together. They just didn't play together enough.
Yeah, that was injuries. Like mm-hmm. you say with all these teams, injuries kill them. But in the end, this is what happens when you have a top heavy team and nobody can step up. And Durant is one of those, like, you know, he wanted to be the bad guy. He wanted to play that role, but everyone, you know, just watching him play, he makes basketball look disgustingly easy.
Yes.
He makes it look, I've never seen a player make it look so effortless.
And he can make a ton of mistakes and just make up for them very efficiently and very quickly, you know?
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was good to see him back in form. Watching Kyrie and Ken Harden fail, you know, they don't, there's a lot of hate amongst those two, but there's nothing you can do other than what they did. It's just injuries and the 27 COVID violations and the contact tracing knocked them out every other week. So
this is a really tough question to gauge. Did you really see any strategies or type of tendencies under Steve Nash as a head coach? I know he had a veteran staff like Mike D'Antoni and Ime Udoka, who's leaving for Boston, and he had Jacques Vaughn. But like, did you see any kind of style other than kind of the fast pace with the offense?
No, there was no. With those three, you can't have it. All you can do is just as that coach is just be a minutes management guy. Mm-hmm. You can't have let's try this play, let's try that play, because none of those guys are going to do it because they all. You know, they all are the smartest guy in the room. They know what to do. Harden knows, well, I could just dribble by myself for 20 seconds and then barrel into somebody and get bailed out.
Right.
Kyrie knows
how to just do. Remember, too, I don't know if we talked about this too much, but I think the NBA is ratifying that rule so that they don't call it as much. The in the paint rip through. So we'll see what I don't know if that's going to really make a difference, but we'll see.
It should make a difference.
Well, it'll affect Harden the most because he's the repeat offender. Kyrie on a playoff scenario is a nightmare because his one-on-one matchup ability, like when he's really got it going, no one can guard him. Like he just has to stay healthy is the key.
And that's all we could say about Brooklyn is just stay healthy and hope their advanced scouting department and their college scouting is very good because that's all they can hope on right now is minimum contracts.
Yeah, the only other thing I would say is other than the staying healthy part is just like finding chemistry within that three-man nucleus. They only played 7 games in that regular season. I kind of liken this to like when the Miami Heat got together and they had the same economic structure where you had those big three, but because of the cap eating up most of those three, you had to just kind of take table scraps in terms of salary for the other guys. And some good players would take less, like a Blake Griffin, to come back or go in there and play with them because they knew they could win a ring. And that first season, they struggled a little bit, but they still got to the finals and lost. Then the next year or two after that, that's when they really got on a run. And I got a feeling that might happen with Brooklyn next year.
Oh, my goodness. Rui Hachimura against Anthony Davis, who got the worst of that in more ways than one.
Wow, my goodness gracious. Rui in transition, AD coming at him. My goodness, he had nothing for him. Rui.
All right, Adam, the Washington Wizards took a swing when they finally flipped John Wall, who had a little bit of a maligned end to his contractual obligations with the Wizards. They flipped him for Russell Westbrook, who also had a pretty meaty contract of his own to play with Bradley Beal. Beal averaged 31 points a game. Russell Westbrook played pretty well kind of down the stretch of that regular season, but they just barely got into the play-in. After rallying, they were able to get that 8th seed, which they were already slotted for before the play-in, and they played their way into it. And then they lost to the Philadelphia 76ers in the first round. It was kind of fun to watch a two-guard lineup again with the Wizards, because with Wall and Beal, it was kind of fun. And then with Westbrook and Beal, it was a little similar, but Westbrook obviously is so offensively minded. You knew that they had a lot of flaws.
This team was just decimated by injuries. I mean, you know,
COVID hit them really hard in January.
They got hit hard by that. Thomas Bryant went out like within like the first week of the season for the entire year.
He only played 10 games.
Yeah, and then that was basically, well, he was their starting center, and they had, you know, due to the John Wall situation, they had no cap room, period. So you, that's all they had. He was, him and Robin Lopez were their only big men, and then just they were just decimated early on, and they completely overachieved making the 8 seed of
I actually agree with that. I felt like even though it was 34-38, Scott Brooks did lose his job at the end. I do think Brooks being there and having Coach Westbrook in Oklahoma City was helpful. He was able to feel comfortable. I'm not trying to say like, you know, Westbrook has to be babied because he's this egotistical superstar type. But, you know, he is a kind of guy where when Russ, we saw this in Oklahoma City, where when you have him as your starting guard, you have to play, you have to make him comfortable. And the way that he plays is just very, very different. High possession count, high shot volume, not a lot of threes. You just sort of almost have to give in to his style.
Yes, he's going to give you a triple-double or quadruple-double if you count turnovers. But
I thought it was a miracle that Beal got 31 points a game with him, to be honest.
You have to pass it eventually, but it was just everything else was just, you know, they were high on the rookie they drafted.
Denny Avdija.
Yes, they were high on him, but they didn't play him right. And everyone is like, well, what are you doing? They signed Davis Bertans to a 5-year deal, who after he had opted out of the bubble, and he was highly disappointing. So
he did average 3 3 pointers made a game, which is really good. So he's still a good shooter.
They expected way more.
Mm-hmm.
And giving him a ton of money, you know, he was the one, well, okay, we're going to put, you will be the third guy on this team. And he didn't do that. And then, like I said, with injuries, they're just left with literally people off the street coming to play at the end. So they completely overachieved. How do they rebuild? What do you think?
Okay, for rebuilding, the problem for them is that they're still, like, pretty close to the luxury tax because of Westbrook and Beal. Beal has $28 million on his salary, but that's gonna bump up because he's gonna have a new deal kicking in anyway pretty soon. If the Wizards are serious about competing, they have to keep Beal. Westbrook has $41 million, so you
have combined $78 million next season.
Right, and then you talk about Bertans, who's locked in for a good while at like in the team
16.
In terms of salary. You did see a little bit of development in the playoff, like once we got to that postseason portion from Rui Hachimura. They made a really nice deal at the very end that no one talked about, where they flipped, I believe, they got Daniel Gafford and Chandler Hutchinson in exchange for Troy Brown Jr., who was a disappointing first round pick for them. Gafford actually played really well for them, averaged like 2 blocks a game, 6 rebounds. He's going to be in the fold. We'll see
Hutchinson will be gone.
No, Hutchinson will be gone. Avdija, I don't know. Like, he only played 54 games. You talked about his issues. He also had an ankle injury. We'll just see. Maybe I have rose colored glasses. I liked Rui Hachimura. I think Robin Lopez, just because of being so close to the tax, I think Lopez is gone. He was good defensively for them in the middle, but I can see him actually.
But he'll be more valuable elsewhere.
Correct. Like, I can see
if you're gonna, you know,
Portland or something like that, right?
Like Brook Lopez. Well, do you want the money or do you want to be in a winning championship situation? Oh, I want to be in the championship situation. You know, somebody's going to be like, well, you know, do you want to make $7 million playing for Washington, or do you want to make $7 million playing for a playoff team, like a legit one? Oh yeah, he'll go elsewhere. So,
and the rest are sort of the bottom feeder ones. There's really no albatross contracts where you can just dump them to try to create space, like Cassius Winston, Garrison Matthews, Alex Len. Like, all these guys, once you really shave it off, you're still close to the luxury tax. You're still well over the cap. You know, the one big idea you can do, Adam, is you can just try to trade Russell Westbrook, but you would have to give up assets to do it, the same way that that Houston had to when they dumped him to Washington.
Well, the problem with that is all you could do is trade him to basically Houston or Oklahoma City again, where neither of them want him. So there's not many teams who have that could just take him.
Well, there's the Knicks. There's the Knicks. They have a lot of space. But I don't know if they want to do that. If they get a draft pick coming back because they got the Dallas one too, maybe the Knicks will do it. But yeah, I think you either just go big or you just let the contracts that you don't have to commit to anymore lapse. If you want to try to get really active, then maybe you can try to move Bertans this offseason and hope that Thomas Bryant comes back to shore up that middle now that you don't have Lopez anymore. Offensively, they were really good. They were the fastest paced team and they were high in terms of points per game, but they turned the ball over a ton. They never made any threes, which was not shocking because of Westbrook and the struggles from Bertans. And defensively, they were, in terms of points allowed, they were the worst in the league. So, you know, you got to get better on defense. They bring in Wes Unseld Jr., who has actually, it's funny because his dad was a legend, the late Wes Unseld Sr. He was a legend with the Washington Bullets, won an NBA title there, but he's been coaching at Denver. He's been like a big man coach for like Nikola Jokic and such. So let's see if that kind of rubs off on him in Washington.